Welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
Well, it's a call that His Excellency the President made from the day election results were announced. And it's just re-echoing those calls, especially when we continue to hear voices who are trying to sow discord amongst us.
Sierra Leone's president calls on citizens to work together to move the country forward, irrespective of their political affiliations.
Well, his immediate reaction is the fact that God's words will surely come to pass, even when mere mortals tend to obstruct the course of justice. He's relaxed because it's not about Atiku Abubakar, it's not about him, it's about democracy.
Former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar to proceed to the Supreme Court to challenge the outcome of the last presidential election.
Our party is calling for fresh elections, and SADC has already said that there was no election in Zimbabwe. What happened in Zimbabwe cannot be considered as a free and fair, let alone a legitimate election.
And Zimbabwe's main opposition party calls for fresh elections. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Morocco's Interior Ministry says the death toll from the 6.8 magnitude earthquake that shook areas of the country late Friday has risen to more than 800, while the number of injured has climbed to 672. U.S. President Joe Biden says he's saddened by the loss of life and devastation by the quake. He says the U.S. is working with Rabat to ensure American and Moroccan citizens are safe and is ready to provide assistance. Biden says he stands by Morocco and his friend, King Mohammed VI, at this difficult moment. Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio is calling on citizens to work together to move the country forward irrespective of their political affiliations. The president also says his administration is committed to dialogue with the opposition to address their concerns about the recent elections. This after the opposition rejected the outcome of the presidential vote, saying it was fraught with irregularities and rigging. Opposition groups also demanded international partners, including the Commonwealth, to mediate the talks. The president has since accepted their demands for the dialogue to address opposition concerns. For more on the call to work together to improve the lives of citizens, I read Chen Oba. He is the Sierra Leonean Minister for Information and Civic Education.
Well, it's a call that His Excellency the President made from the day election results were announced. And it's just re-echoing those calls, especially when we continue to hear voices who are trying to sow discord amongst us. So what the government and the president is saying to the people of Sierra Leone is that we have had an election. The legitimate institutions have presided over those elections. There are, we acknowledge, some questions about technical, practical, operational issues around the elections, but those, we are having processes, credible mediators who are helping us to resolve those differences with our siblings in the opposition. But the most important thing is, especially at this time, as a country, we need to unite, we need to come together and move the country forward. It's time for development, it's time for unity, and it's time for peace.
Well, Minister Ba, is the government ready to engage in this dialogue without preconditions, mediated by partners, both locally and internationally, to address concerns raised by the opposition during the election process?
Our president is a man of peace, is a man of dialogue. As you will recall, this is the president who initiated the dialogue with the very brutal Revolutionary United Front rebels in the 90s to give us peace. He is a man who believes deeply in dialogue. And so the answer to that question, I think, is obvious. President Diu and the government of Sierra Leone is ready, able, willing, any day, any hour, to continue to engage our sisters and brothers in the opposition to talk about how we can move this country forward, how we can strengthen our democratic institutions, and how we can build on the progress that we have seen so far as a country since the dark days of the 90s.
Are you therefore saying that the government has extended an olive branch to the opposition as issues of the elections are addressed in this call for unity and to push the country forward?
Absolutely. The president has been very consistent that his hands are open. He went to Parliament and said that we cannot govern in a democracy without the active participation of the opposition. He has asked for us all to demonstrate political maturity by engaging in dialogue. Just last week, he received a report from the National Commission for Peace and National Cohesion that he set up himself. And this was a report on their engagement, their initial engagement with the All People's Congress Party, about what their demands are, and their calls for an international mediation group. The next day, the very next day, the president issued a memo through my ministry, a communique, accepting everything the Peace Commission said, including their request for international mediators to work with them and to engage with the All People's Congress Party. Our president is willing, ready, any day of the week to continue, as I said, continue his negotiation, his dialogues, peacefully with the opposition, with every force in Sierra Leone, because he believes and he knows that the only way our country can move forward is when we continue to talk with each other and when we work with each other.
Do you mean even though the opposition is claiming that his election victory is illegitimate?
As I said, the president is not setting any preconditions on negotiation. This is a man who studied peace to society. And he understands that, the opposition has expressed certain grievances, but he said very clearly, as he said in Parliament, that the way we resolve those differences and settle the grievances that you may have is by engaging, is by dialogue and peacefully, because we have to move Sierra Leone forward. That is non-negotiable. And we can only do that when we all find ways to work together. Our president is committed to that 100%.
Chen Uba is Sierra Leone's Minister for Information and Civic Education. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. Former Nigerian Vice President Atiku Abubakar will proceed to the Supreme Court to challenge the outcome of the last presidential election. Frank Shaibu, the Special Assistant on Public Communication to former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, says he sharply disagrees with the ruling of the Election Tribunal. His remarks come after the Presidential Elections Petition Tribunal rejected Atiku's petition that challenges the outcome of the presidential vote. Abubakar cited irregularities and rigging that he says delivered the polls to President Bola Tinubu of the Governing All Progressive Congress, or APC. Legal observers say the ruling means the only available option for the former vice president is to seek redress at the Supreme Court, which Shaibu says he plans to do. For more reaction about the court's ruling, I reach Frank Shaibu in the Nigerian capital, Abuja.
Well, his immediate reaction is the fact that God's words will surely come to pass, even when mere mortals tend to obstruct the course of justice. He's relaxed, because it's not about Atiku Abubakar, it's not about him, it's about democracy. It's about the integrity of our election. It's about the legitimacy of the mandate of the people and the dignity of their votes. And that is why we're excited to be to represent the moral imperative in a polity struggling to retrieve its conscience from the depravity of men who have no honor because they have no shame and they have no character.
Frank, some people suggest that the ruling shows that Atiku Abubakar and his lawyers failed to prove that there was any election malpractice or rigging that would change the outcome of the recent presidential election, and that you failed to prove your case in court.
To say that we failed to prove our case is nothing but a vituperation of zero consequence. You could see the justices of the Court of Appeal yesterday struggling to generate and manufacture reasons to defend the anomaly and the judicial rascality they exhibited yesterday during the ruling. There was nothing like that. You could see contradictions upon contradictions in their judgment. That judgment was against, you know, the golden dawn in a country that bears the cradle of the African people. That judgment was against the letters of our Constitution and the Electoral Act. Let me give you a practical example in that judgment, for instance. In one of their rulings against the Allied People's Movement, the APM, the Justice Samani, the chairman of the panel who gave that judgment, claimed that that particular case was a pre-election matter. He said it was a pre-election matter. And that pre-election matters are matters that borders on nomination before primary election. In its own words, and he quoted a particular section of the Constitution. The question is this, sir. Was Bola Tinubu not already declared as candidate of a party before he made the choice of a running mate, whom he gave a name, a curious coinage called a placeholder, before he had to replace the placeholder? How then do you now say that such a case brought before the justice of the tribunal is a pre-election matter? You first need to become a candidate before you can pick a running mate. And after you have emerged as a candidate, anything that goes beyond after that point before the court is a post-election matter.
What is the next step for the former vice president?
The next step is simple. The step is simple, clear and unambiguous. We have our constitutional right of appeal, and we are going to exercise that right. And we are encouraged by the presence of several fearless men and women of the bench at the level of the Supreme Court. And we know that sooner than later, those honorable and noble dispensers of justice at the level of the Supreme Court will deliver a judgment that is uncowed by the threat of immoral power. And that judgment will give a verdict that will represent a historic denunciation of electoral fraud and a befitting deed for mandate banditry.
What do you say to those who are saying that once the election tribunal was unanimous and saying that your case did not merit or your case did not meet the test at that court, similar fate awaits you when you go to the Supreme Court? How do you respond to those who are analyzing it?
It is not correct. Those are what I call beer parlor analysis. The law is tried. Law is not based on what anybody thinks. Law is not based on emotion. You cannot run a presidency without a people. You cannot rule over a people who are not aware that you are their president. You cannot continue to try hard to impress the people while clutching an illicit and interdicted mandate. You can't rule over such people. You cannot. Can there be any preaching or quoting of the Holy Bible by a criminal that can be persuasive and smooth-tongued? Is it possible? The core foundation of democracy is the rule of law and the respect of the people's will, as freely expressed during the election. Where these two ingredients are missing, no amount of solid block placed on the wrong foundation will make a building to stand. It is not possible. But it is about the law and the judgment, because in their mad rush to deliver a judgment in favor of Tinubu yesterday, they made a lot of blunders against the Constitution. It was a clear desecration of our Constitution.
Frank Shuaibu is the Special Assistant on Public Communication to former Vice President Atiku Abubakar. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Still in Nigeria, the Governing All Progressive Congress, or APC, says it is vindicated after the Presidential Elections Petition Tribunal rejected petitions that challenge the outcome of the presidential vote. Former Vice President Atiku Abubakar from the main opposition People's Democratic Party, or PDP, and Peter Obi of the Labour Party separately petitioned the tribunal seeking to invalidate the victory of Bola Tinubu from the governing APC. Citing alleged lack of transparency, voter irregularities and rigging, the two petitioners rejected the outcome of the presidential vote. But the APC maintained that Tinubu won the election. Meanwhile, the two groups say they plan to take their cases to the Supreme Court to seek legal redress. This after rejecting the ruling of the Presidential Elections Petition Tribunal. For more reaction from the governing party following the tribunal's ruling, I reach barrister Felix Moka. He is the National Publicity Secretary of the ruling APC.
We are very delighted at the decision of the Presidential Election Petitions Court. And yes, it is a total vindication of the president, Atiwaju Bola Tinubu, and the All Progressives Congress. We feel very, very vindicated because, as we have said from the get-go, the election was free and fair. And, you know, the president won the election free and square. And that's what the court said. And what was significant was that the opposition parties that were the plaintiffs in that court were unable to provide any cogent evidence of any kind to support the allegations that they had made, that there was widespread fraud, that there was widespread intimidation, widespread violence, you know, and that they, in fact, won the election.
But Barrister Moka, they have unanimously rejected the ruling of the court, vowing to proceed to the Supreme Court to seek legal redress, faulting literally the decision by the Elections Petition Tribunal. Your reaction to that?
That is within their democratic right to go to the Supreme Court. We're not concerned about that because there's really no basis for them to do so. And if they do so, we are confident that the Supreme Court will also throw out the appeals because you don't go to the Supreme Court with word of mouth. You must go there with clear, you know, arguments that the lower court erred in law, that they misapplied the law or misstated the facts. But that is not something that these petitioners, now if they appeal, will become appellants, have any prospect of doing. So we're not concerned about that. They're just going to continue to, you know, I mean, waste, you know, everybody's time and resources.
Some of the questions they were raising was that the judges contorted themselves literally into a pretzel trying to justify why the president was adjudged the winner of the presidential vote, and that it was clear that Nigerians unanimously did not want to choose him as the legitimate president, and that is why they think that it will be successful.
These judges were meticulous. Every motion that was brought, every witness deposition and testimony that was received, every document tendered, each one of those, you know, pieces of, you know, material were meticulously reviewed by this court. And the court simply came to the conclusion that there was no evidence to support the case that they had brought. So the judges didn't say or do anything that was outside the ambit of judicial review. They did that and did that professionally. Now, yes, they have a right to go to the court of appeal, but they shouldn't involve and invoke Nigerians. Nigerians voted massively. The majority of those who voted for our party. That's why the president is, you know, is inaugurated. All of the other flimsy argument made about the FCT, that, you know, he didn't score 25% in the FCT, therefore he can't be president. That is ridiculous. Peter, look, you know, can you imagine, you know, anybody in the United States saying that, you know, unless you win 25% of vote in the District of Columbia, in Washington, D.C., a president will never get elected. Can you imagine such a scenario? There's no jurisdiction where that happens, where you give veto power, veto votes to residents or, you know, voters within any specific city or state, for that matter, to say that unless a candidate wins in that particular state, he cannot become, you know, a president. That doesn't happen anywhere, and it's not what the Constitution says in Nigeria. So, look, on all counts, the case brought by the opposition, the Labour Party, Peter Obi of the Labour Party, Atiku Abubakar of the PDP was hopeless from the start. And as a matter of fact, you know, I will even go on a lighter note to suggest to Peter Obi, he needs to go get a refund from his lawyers because they didn't serve him at all. He was poorly served by those lawyers. They should have advised him that he had no case, no basis to actually even approach the courts in the first instance. So whether at the tribunal or the Supreme Court, we remain confident that the courts will finally put paid to this frolic that they've embarked on.
Barrister Felix Morka is the National Publicity Secretary of Nigeria's governing party, the APC. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Liberia, Sarah Beslow Nyanti, the presidential candidate of the opposition party, African Liberation League, or ALL, says the positive reaction from citizens gives her confidence she will defeat incumbent President George Weah in the coming presidential contest. Nyanti served as the deputy representative of the UN Secretary General and resident coordinator of the UN mission in South Sudan. She says her vast experience makes her uniquely qualified to implement mechanisms to resolve the challenges facing the country. Liberians go to the polls on October 10 to choose a new president, House of Representatives, and a whole and a half of the Senate. For more about her candidacy and electoral prospects, I read Sarah Beslow Nyanti in the Liberian capital of Monrovia.
What I've seen in the communities I've visited and with the people I've spoken with, there is a very positive reaction. Many people have told me about their reflections of the time with Madam Sirleaf as president. They feel that they want a female president again. Many have told me that they want another female president. They feel that women's leadership will bring compassion. It will bring more sympathetic views of the plight of women and children. And they feel that Liberia is poised for another female president.
You are not the only female presidential candidate in this race. So why do you think it is you who they will repose confidence in to choose you as the next president?
The experience, the capacity, the knowledge, the understanding of what is required to solve the problems in Liberia, and the direct experience that has the proven track record in relation to that, in terms of building systems that lift people out of poverty, in terms of understanding the situation faced by the most vulnerable, the work in development in different countries and in humanitarian leadership around the world, that experience, that capacity is understood as what's required to solve the problems that Liberia faces today. And that's why I continue to say that this is not only about an election and a position, this is about a process and a people, ensuring that all of that capacity and all of that experience is used to influence the political culture and to influence how we move forward in uniting the country for us to heal, reconcile, and transform Liberia.
Talking about the upcoming election, do you have confidence that the Electoral Commission will administer a credible vote? Because you are calling on the international community, including ECOWAS and the African Union, to help ensure that the Electoral Commission administers transparent and credible polls.
I have served in many countries, serving the most marginalized, serving populations, millions of people, trying to ensure that I work with their governments to empower them and to have them fulfill their rights. So I come from a place of experience in conflict and post-conflict settings. And when you see the indicators and you see possible signals of what could end up being violence, you want to take steps to ensure that you influence and you mitigate. And this is what the call to action is about. It's about looking at the situation in Liberia and calling out to ECOWAS and AU and saying to them, we know what those triggers are. We've served in other countries. We've seen it. Preventive diplomacy and ensuring that we act outside the box. And that's why we're calling on ECOWAS to prevent a crisis and bolster the confidence in our electoral process by strengthening the ECOWAS advisory training team in Liberia. There's a training team already here. It needs to be strengthened and expanded. We need systems and IT analysts to help us to build confidence in the voters register, to make sure that there's an audit of the register and make sure the register is shared with everyone. But most importantly also, we have the poorest of the poor, the most marginalized and hard to reach populations who need to ensure that they have participation in our electoral process. For that to happen, we need to have support for reaching those areas. Bad road conditions, the rainy season, and inaccessible areas will make it difficult for us to fully implement our electoral process. So we're calling on ECOWAS AU to help us as a country. And this is not about me or my party or about the incumbency. It's about a people, ensuring that we prevent electoral violence, ensuring that we build confidence in the electoral system, ensuring that we think outside the box so that when we go to the polls on October 10th, every voter has the confidence that their vote will be protected and that you have support from the international community that will mitigate electoral violence.
If they repose confidence in you, what will be your number three things you will do within the first 3 days of your presidency?
Within the first 3 days of the presidency, I will be working on ensuring that we have a gender balance team, putting together a team, a crack team of all Liberians who want to put their hands to the plow and making sure we have 50% representation of women in that cabinet in the first 3 days, calling for peace and calm while we're working on putting the team together, calling for peace and calm and making sure that all Liberians are prepared to participate in transforming Liberia and restarting Liberia. We will be making sure that we let people know upfront that safety and security of all Liberians is important and the issue of corruption and the cries of the people around corruption will be heard. We'll be calling for the institution of a fast-track corruption code within the first 90 days.
Sarah Baslow Nyanti is the presidential candidate of the opposition party African Liberation League. She spoke with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. In Zimbabwe, the main opposition party Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, says its decision not to seek legal redress over the disputed elections is an indictment of the independence of the judiciary. This after the party called on the international community, including the Southern African Development Community, SADC, to pressure the administration for fresh elections, citing a lack of transparency, intimidation and harassment of its supporters during the election process. The opposition party rejected the outcome of the presidential polls, but supporters of the governing ZANU-PF reject the criticism, saying the CCC are sore losers. Promise Nkwanazi, a spokesperson for the main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, or CCC, tells me that the party will only engage in a dialogue with the government if its arrested members and sympathizers are released.
Our party is calling for fresh elections, and SADC has already said that there was no election in Zimbabwe. What happened in Zimbabwe cannot be considered as a free and fair, let alone a legitimate election.
But do you think this call for fresh elections will be listened to by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission and, for that matter, the government after installing the president?
It must be listened to. You know that in 2008, we had a disputed election as well. President Mugabe then was forced by SADC and AU to work with President Morgan Tsvangirai in forming a government of national unity in which they worked together for 5 years. So there is precedent. And indeed, SADC has got the political jurisdiction to adjudicate and make recommendations to the Zimbabwean situation.
If SADC recommends that ZANU-PF should work with CCC, will CCC be available to work in a unity government led by President Emmerson Mnangagwa?
No, it's not obvious that it has to be led by Emmerson Mnangagwa. The election is disputed. We believe that President Nelson Chamisa is the one that won the elections. We are only available to work with Mr. Mnangagwa in a transitional framework in which we will be underwriting a process or a roadmap towards a free and fair election in the most immediate possible time.
What if the ZANU-PF, the ruling government, decides that it will not abide by recommendations from the SADC community? Then what happens next for CCC?
Well, it will see at that point in time, but we don't expect them not to abide by the SADC recommendations. In any case, even if they don't abide, pressure, both domestic and regional and international, will come to bear on Mr. Mnangagwa and his government will be illegitimate, and it will be very difficult for Mr. Mnangagwa to govern effectively. So it is in his favor that he must abide and comply so that he becomes an acceptable part of the region as well as of the international community.
Well, Promise, I'm sure you are aware that a group has called for an investigation of the head of the SADC Pole Observer Mission, Dr. Neves Mumba, who is a former Zambian vice president, that he was biased or in favor of CCC during the election process, which they said undermined the mandate of the SADC Pole Observer Mission to be unbiased or neutral during the election process. Your response to that?
What I can tell you is that Dr. Mumba was just but a chairperson of a group of SADC observers under the auspices of the SADC Election Observer Mission. He was not on his own. The views expressed in the preliminary as well as the final report are not Dr. Mumba's views. They are the collective views of the Election Observer Mission as a collective.
So what has been your message or CCC's message to your supporters after some people say you raised their level of expectations that you were going to win the election? However, President Nelson Mnangagwa was declared winner and has subsequently been installed as president of Zimbabwe.
Well, we have no qualms with the fact that we actually won the elections. We know that we won the elections. We've got the evidence. The fact that we didn't present it to court is an indictment on the court, and the judges must be thinking about this, that we've come into a situation where our courts are no longer a station of dispute resolution or an option to be considered under our domestic remedies. We are doing everything that is permissible in a democratic society, in the region and domestically, to ensure that we ratchet up pressure using peaceful and non-violent means to bring Mr. Mnangagwa to the table to discuss the framework for a fresh, free and fair election.
Are you willing to engage in a dialogue without preconditions with President NFC Mnangagwa and, for that matter, the ZANU-PF?
We are willing to engage in a dialogue that is aimed towards creating a framework towards a fresh, free and fair election. We will not enter into any dialogue as long as our members are still in prison. For there to be dialogue as a starting point, all our political activists and leaders who are imprisoned must be freed. And then we can take it from there in terms of discussing a framework to a fresh election in the most immediate time possible.
Promise Nkwananzi is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe's main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change or CCC. He spoke with me from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare. A Ugandan parliamentarian is seeking a motion to regulate the staffing and provision of vehicles to the office of the president. Ibrahim Semuju says it is too expensive and unsustainable for the office to employ about 996 people, including 82 presidential advisors and 27 presidential assistants. Local media reports the parliamentarian are saying the office of the president has 400 vehicles, 59 waitresses, 14 room attendants, 40 private secretaries, 80 gardeners, 129 drivers, 50 cleaners, 35 cooks, and 12 chefs. But supporters of the governing National Resistance Movement, or NRM, dismiss the accusations as an attempt to embarrass the president and score political points at his expense. For a reaction to the budget for the president's office, I reach parliamentarian Ibrahim Semuju.
I have actually today filed a note with the speaker with the intention of moving a motion to regulate the recruitment and the provision of vehicles to the president, because the concern, we spend annually 410 billion shilling on the presidency, and the presidency has gone outside the Presidential Emoluments and Benefits Act and started recruiting people without following the law. At the moment, the president of Uganda at his residence, State House, he employs 996 staff at the expense of medical personnel in hospital. We have 2,000 medical interns who run most of our hospitals. They are not deployed because of money. Yet the president has staff he does not need: gardeners, cooks, room attendants. So the president is being extravagant, yet we have many, many problems, including the suspension of funding by the World Bank. So that's why I want Parliament to move a motion to stop the president from this excessive abuse of the presidency.
Don't you think with the kind of government that is being run in Uganda and the population, the president needs these people to advise him on how better to administer and how to manage the affairs of Uganda to be effective as it is at the moment?
The principal institution that is supposed to be advising the president is the cabinet. And we have one of the biggest cabinets in the world. The cabinet of Uganda comprises 85, 86 ministers. Uganda has, our GDP is $45 billion. Turkey, with over $500 billion GDP, has a cabinet of less than 20 ministers. Each of these ministers who are supposed to be the principal advisor of the president has a convoy. On top of that, he has added another 82 advisors. You remember the first time he appointed advisors, Professor Kanyehamba, a retired Supreme Court judge, said actually they had looked for Museveni to advise him and they couldn't find him. So these advisors are not being recruited to advise the president, but just an opportunity to give them money.
But some people are saying you are just playing politics with all this.
The presidency did not set up itself. The law on Presidential Emoluments and Benefits Act lists what the president is entitled to. He's entitled to a limousine, a lead police car, is entitled to a security vehicle. It does not give him 66 vehicles like he is having today, including, by the way, recently his son was in eastern Uganda on a campaign trail, also in a presidential convoy. His wife also has a presidential convoy. We are a poor country. If we are rich like Qatar and Kuwait, maybe the president can be afforded that luxury. But we are a country that cannot even pay. Last financial year, we are unable to pay our loan. That's how the international lenders ended up encroaching on our reserves. So these things are issues of life and death. We're only asking the president really to be sympathetic to the country.
But don't you think the first son or the son of the president, who is also an advisor, was a head of a special military unit, and the first lady need to be protected?
You see, the protection must be engraved in the law. It's not a dream. If the law gives you race, you can only give yourself more by having the law changed. I am talking about the law on Presidential Emoluments and Benefits Act. Yes, we need to protect the president, but the president must not exaggerate the threat. You mean the president must have a convoy, the son, the wife, and we look, this country has just 550 ambulances. We have a gap of 340 ambulances. You cannot transport Ugandans who are sick to hospital, but you're able to transport illegally your children to campaign rallies.
Ibrahim Semuju is a member of parliament. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Still in Uganda, the opposition party National Unity Platform, or NUP, is calling on citizens to rise to ensure the respect of the rule of law and their fundamental rights. Parliamentarian Francis Zaki says the positive reaction from citizens so far demonstrates that the party's message is being widely accepted. His remarks come as leaders of the NUP, including its presidential candidate Bobi Wine, embark on what it calls a nationwide mobilization tour in preparation for 2026 general election. This as the party outlines its alternative plans to resolve the challenges facing the country. Businessman and parliamentarian Francis Zaki is on the party's campaign tour. I reach him via telephone to talk about the party's message and electoral prospect.
We are in the northern part of Uganda, and the reactions that is coming from Ugandans, they are really very, very, very happy that this time we have been able to reach them out without any kind of interruptions. Our reason being that last time when we moved out during campaigns, there was a lot of human rights violations from the state. And this time it has been a bit peaceful and been able to reach out to our people. And they're extremely very, very, very happy, and they're showing us massive support.
What is the significance of this national tour and engaging Ugandans? What is the significance of it and why embark on it?
This is under our mobilization department in the party, and our very first motive is to make sure that Ugandans wake up, wake them up. We put a lot of energy in them so that they are able to do what they are supposed to be doing, and that is through these kind of mobilizations and these tours, so that they know that it's not about us, the leaders, but it's about them as Ugandans, and we really see that it is working out.
As a member of parliament and a businessman, what message is the NUP giving the people of Uganda that you think will necessitate their support?
First and foremost, the message we are putting out there is that Ugandans should rise up to the occasion to know that it is their right to fight for their country, to fight the different violations that have happened to them. And we are calling upon Ugandans, especially the young people, that they should find it within themselves to mobilize, to organize, to plan for this kind of revolution at this stage. And as a member of parliament, I believe this is the time that we need to, all of us, to move to our different areas to make sure that Ugandans wake up and rise up to the occasion to make sure that their rights are respected and they get back their power that Museveni took away from them.
When you talk about revolution in Uganda, what do you mean by that? Because some people may misinterpret it as calling for an armed insurrection or destabilize the country or to forcefully depose the government at the moment.
Yeah, for the last 7 years, Mr. Museveni, he has been in government and he has been imposing himself as president without the respect of Ugandans, without Ugandans voting him, and he has been rigging elections. He has been doing whatever he can to put down the economy of the country. The people are in extreme poverty. The people in Uganda are really, really very, very, very poor. So in that trend, only takes Ugandans to wake up to make sure that their rights are respected, to make sure that there is democracy, to make sure that at least the rule of law is in control in Uganda. So that's why we believe that this is the time for Ugandans to put up a very, very strong resistance against the Museveni regime.
NRM supporters are saying you get defeated at the polls, you create chaos, tension in the country by NUP supporters, you go to court, you are unable to prove your case in court, yet you accuse the government of rigging elections. How do you respond to that?
You have just said it right, that the NUP supporters, and these are the majority. So when they rise up to the occasion, they of course perceive it in a different way. So they rigged the elections. Even the people who were observing these elections, they could say so. First and foremost, you saw that Mr. Museveni chased away most of the poor went to observe these elections, and the few who remained came up with a very, very strong message. Even the international media and the international, you know, partners came up with a statement showing that all that happened in the elections, it was all, you know, it was all faulty.
Francis Zaake is a member of the Ugandan parliament and a leading member of the opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, this Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection.
Zavakolam, Okulam, Unima, Wobanga, Okolam, Place, to my place, loving you always, too. Baby, just a shade, oh. And after na kolobate systeme za yanzambe alobakate misala imona na kakaka le grand moine ro Nathalie Bumba zero faute
elenga limbono yo meka elenga
kaya kaya musa
elenga limbono na tuka elengi
Joseph Bertier
lokola soso na loso
from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nylon Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nylon team, including producer Douglas Impuga, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, do not insult the alligator until you cross the river. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.